Blog Talk Radio.
Your favorite cheer and flow. Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the backyard. It's time for Labrish. This is Margaret Marshall, your host, and I'd like to welcome my listeners in line as well as the listeners on the board calling in on your telephone. Welcome to the backyard. I hope you had a wonderful week. I certainly did, because as most of you know, I'm a senior, and my eldest grandchild celebrated his 7th birthday. Boy, was I happy. 7 years. Anyway, I had a chance to go to Laser Quest. So, you know, that's a modern high-tech game that 7-year-olds just love. Fortunately for me, I did not have to be part of the game. So that was I was very glad about that. Anyway, I want to welcome everybody, and tonight you know that we are going back in our memory bank, and we have started a segment called Leaving a Legacy, and we're going to pull some information out of the seniors and the seniors about what life was like when they grew up on our beautiful island of Jamaica. So tonight, if you are on my list, you will know that we are welcoming and we will be labrishing with one of our favorite fans. And if our special guest, Mr. Lane Nunez, would put his hands up, I'd like to welcome him to the backyard. So I'm waiting until he raises his hands, but I'll tell you that Mr. Lane Nunez is a New Yorker, and he is a retired executive, New York executive, and he is a world traveler, have traveled all over the world, and is just a joy to have him on the backyard because he's always infused with a lot of information, and he's just as much in love with the culture that he has left behind as I am. So, Mr. Nunez, if you are there, will you raise your hands, please? Oh, well, I see he perhaps have not joined me yet, so I'd like to tell you a little bit about what... Oh, yes, he has. So, good evening, Mr. Nunez. Welcome to the backyard.
Welcome. Thank you.
All right. So, you know, we're going to pick your brains tonight.
Yes, but first I have to mention that the Yankees are playing tonight. You know, I have to do that.
Okay, that means undivided attention.
They're in the playoff, right?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know something? I'm going to make it short and sweet.
Okay.
So we're going to get right to it.
Mm-hmm.
So for the listeners who perhaps may not know who you are, because we're being downloaded long after we transmit, so will you please identify yourself, sir? And could you tell us, if you don't mind, if you want to, the year you were born?
Well, yeah.
Or the period that you remember.
No. I just had a birthday, and I'm very proud of it. It was on September 1st.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. I missed it, didn't
okay.
I?
Right.
Well, on the behalf of the Backyard fans, I'd like to wish you a happy belated birthday.
Yes, and I qualify as a senior, as you do. I was born in 1933.
1933.
So you can do the math.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I can. And where were you born? Do you know where you were born?
Yes, in Kingston. I forget the name of this hospital just up by Tarrington Bridge there.
Oh, okay. Not KPH.
No. Well, in those days, KPH was not as notorious as it is now.
I got you.
Use that word.
Right. I don't really know, because I know a lot of people in those days were born at home.
True. Yes. That's the midwife process was fully in bloom there.
Yes,
in those days.
Does anybody know if that is still going on? If any of our callers on the board could fill us in on it. You know, as this is a laboratory, we have a ongoing casual conversation while we talk about whatever our subject is. So feel free if you want to interact with us or ask our guests a question, feel free to put up your hand by hitting one on your telephone. And for our callers online that would like to interact with us, the call-in number is 718-1-718, if you're out of New York, I suppose, 766-4558. And we'd love to have you join us. So back to you, Leigh.
Yep. And I guess it would be remiss if I didn't say that I'm very glad to be here, because when I was born, I was only a pound and a half.
Oh, really?
I
didn't even know that.
Yeah.
Were you a preemie? Were you a premature baby?
Preemie, yes. And, you know, in those days, when you are born at such a minimum
weight, uh-huh.
The chances are not as good that you're going to survive, because nowadays, you know, they have a lot of modern ways of keeping you in an incubator and blah, blah, blah.
Right, right.
But they were getting me out of the hospital, pinned on a pillow.
Yeah.
And we
had large safety pins.
Yeah, people were calling my names, like the Mirasma baby. What am I doing out there?
Oh, how cute.
Yeah. But, you know, that was a big start to me coming into this world and in a country that we all love.
Uh-huh.
And to the seniors who are listening, they have to remember that this is an era in the 40s we're talking about.
Right.
Should be reminded that this was pre-independence.
Oh, so
you
long
know,
before that.
Yeah, we were all British subjects at the time.
Right.
And the country was still a British colony.
Uh-huh.
We had a governor.
Uh-huh.
And this governor represented the crown in the mother country, England.
Right, right.
And we were under their military protection.
Right.
Matter of fact, as a little boy, I used to... I liked parades and stuff, and since we were under the protection of the British, they would have contingents of some military people in Jamaica, and whenever there was a big occasion, I would try to find where they are just to see them march and stuff. I don't know if you recall, Madge, that we had the Royal Welsh Fusiliers in Jamaica.
Oh, yes, yes.
In those days.
Uh-huh.
And they were distinctive with the their furry, the black furry hats with plumed headdress.
Right, definitely. Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, and they would come down the parade route with their band, you know, the fife and drum band.
Uh-huh.
And that was exciting.
Right. Now, how old can you remember any event? How young you think you were when any of the events you can remember?
Well, you know, this is a funny period here. I can remember little things happening before I actually went to school. And I'm talking about, I might have been 5, 6 when the thing that I remember, and when I tell you what it is, it's no wonder I remember it. I was walking around the veranda, holding on to the rail, and slipped and fell and hit my chin. And I bled, you would not believe, I was about 5, and I still have the mark now. But it's something that I remember, you know?
Right, because there is, it was trauma. It was
trauma,
traumatic.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
And I sort of remember that I had a nanny called Mimi. And I remember her very well because she had something which to me was a toy, but to her, she her hands shook. At that point, I didn't know why they shook. And she had a magnetic instrument that she used to rest her hand on there. And I guess the impulses from the magnet helped the shaking of her hand.
Wow. And
you
this
know?
Was like in 1938, 39.
Has to be, you know?
Yeah.
So you remember little things and like that. But then more to reality now, in about you know, you have to dig deep into your memory bank to come up with these things.
Yes, and that is great. Good exercise for the memory bank.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember going to, I didn't think at first that I had gone to a public school. And then I remembered that I went to a public school for about 3 months. And some of you might remember a school, the name was Conversorium.
Oh, yes, I remember that name.
The Conversorium was the public school. If you ever had to go to a public school, that was the one that you wanted to go because it was renowned. It a lot of famous people came out of Conversorium.
And as so are you saying that that would be sort of like kindergarten?
It was before. Well, if you put it in those terms, yes. But if you think of the age of the people, the kids that went there, we're talking about, you can correct me if I'm wrong, because 5, 6...
Yeah, I think that would be about the age.
That would be age of kindergarten.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah, and what was notable about that school was the headmistress.
Uh-huh.
You know, this headmistress was a much feared lady. Her name was Miss Rudd.
Mm-hmm.
And
was she English?
No, she was very well. You have to remember that in those days, a postmistress in a district, we're not talking about Kingston necessarily,
right?
Was a very powerful person.
Of course, yes.
And
a representative of the government.
A representative of the government.
Uh-huh.
A headmistress was along the same vein. She had a lot of power, and she was appointed by government. And this lady really played out her role. And if you're in a classroom, you're under the guidance of a class mistress, and you better be a good boy or girl because you don't want to be reported to Miss Rudd.
Right, right.
And I can remember, when you're reported to the headmistress, it's like they wait until about 4:30 before they tell you what the consequences of what you did is going to be.
Uh-huh.
And if it turns out that it reached the headmistress, there is going to be a huge ceremony, and you're going to be in front of the whole student body.
Right.
And, depending on what it might be, you're going to get the cane for one stroke, two strokes, three strokes, and so on. So it was a big spectacle.
Well, may I ask you a question?
Yes.
Was she the kind that would announce how many strokes the punishment was? Because
no.
I remember that in the school I went to. They would tell you ahead of time, like, it's going to be 2 lashes or 3 lashes or whatever amount they determined with whatever crime.
When you put it like that, it really sounds ominous. lashes.
Remember that clearly.
Because it really was lashes when you sort of connect a strap with lashes, but the cane was something else.
Right, right.
And
for the people who don't know what the cane was, wasn't it made out of bamboo?
Bamboo.
Yes.
Jamaica,
who might not know, or
yeah.
for the children who never experienced a cane, even
yeah.
the Jamaican children, that came up after us.
Yeah.
And the now ones that perhaps don't know what we're talking about when we talk about a cane. And I got the impression this is not a walking cane. It wasn't the size of a walking cane.
No, it was almost as if it was made specially for this
yes,
purpose.
It was.
And,
it was a little bigger than a pencil, wouldn't you say?
No, it's a little thicker than a pencil. If I said about 3 centimeters, if you think of a broomstick,
right, it's smaller than a broomstick.
And yes, and minimize it by about 2 times, then that might be.
That's what I said. That's a good description of it. And it was a piece of it was made of bamboo.
Yeah.
I remember it very clearly.
And since, I experienced that a couple of times, it's a stinging thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
So anyway, I bring that up because I had forgotten that I went to a public school ever, but I did survive that experience for about 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
3 months. And the only thing I can recall about leaving that school is that I was sorry I left. There was a at the entrance to the school, a snowball man.
Huh?
That he was a marvel. He had to serve a school population. I don't remember how many people were in that. It was a large school, though. Mm-hmm. But you had to stand in line to get a snowball. You remember what a snowball is?
Yes, they shave it with that little shaver thing.
Yeah.
And then pour the syrup on it.
Pour the syrup on it. And somebody told me on the last night that there is also, for a more deluxe one, you call it back and front.
Yes, with ice cream.
With ice cream
on
one
side. Yes, I know the back and front.
Yeah. So, you know, this is, we're talking kids stuff on that time. But I had just started to learn, and one thing I should point out, that in these public schools, it's not like here, you had religion taught. You had an hour in school where they taught religion.
Right. And I remember that the classes were started in the mornings with singing.
With singing.
Right. And a prayer.
And a prayer, and certain days you would have a religious class.
Right.
I was just being taught the 23rd Psalm. And it took me a while to come to grips with all those words, but I was getting it when something happened, and I'm going to tell you what it is. You know, I did might do good to mention that my parents were working class people. You know, they my mother and father left home in the mornings to go to work. And my father would jump on his bike at around 6:30 or so and go off to his work. And
you know what he did?
Well, he worked for an oil company.
And
he had to go, and he had. Do you ever see these huge tankers in on the road with that going to service stations?
Right, sure.
Well,
the SO, I remember the SO ones with the SO on the written on it.
Yeah. Well, he worked for that company, and he would have a tanker. But in those days, the tankers were not as long.
Right.
And because the roads were not that all that great. And he would go all over the island and deliver and sell gasoline to the service stations.
Okay. So in that time, in 1939, you know, there were gas stations. So just because people don't even realize that, there were gas stations being supplied with gas all over the island.
Yeah, and the name of the company was Trinidad Leasehold Company at the time. And if you think of it, you would realize that Trinidad was a huge supplier of oil and gas and kerosene and all of those things. And these also were war years, so gasoline and petrol was not all that easy to come by. You know, sometimes the stations that he would go to would literally run out of gas because the supply was we didn't get all the gasoline we wanted. Went to the war effort.
Right.
You know? But anyway, that was what, and he left the house at about 6:30 in the morning. My mother would jump on the bus that passed right by the gate, as we would say.
On what area of Kingston did you live?
And we lived in Newton Square.
Did that part have a name?
Newton Square probably came on. Yeah, well, I think it was Newton Square, which was on the border of Franklintown.
Okay, so it's on the border of Franklintown, but it wasn't part of Franklintown.
No.
Okay.
Well, it was the border. I guess it's one of those things where if you had mail codes, sometimes you'd get it right, you know. It would be
right
on the border. But anyway...
Or the Kingston was numbered like it is now.
Yeah, right.
Or numbering. Okay.
Exactly. Now, I bring this up because it leads into what my father went to work, my mother went to work, and guess who is in charge now? My grandmother.
Uh-huh. I want to know about your grandmother. Where did, was she from? What parish was she from?
My grandmother was, she had a business in Westmoreland, Betheltown.
Betheltown, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, she had to ride a horse to work.
Uh-huh.
Would you believe?
Yeah.
So, but that's besides the point I'm trying to make now. What I'm saying is that my grandmother took over after my parents left for work.
Right.
So this particular morning, I'm ready to go to school, and I said to my grandmother, I don't feel well. I'm not feeling well. I didn't want to go to school. Now, she says, no go, so brother. Nothing is wrong with you. You're going to school.
Mm-hmm.
So, I went to school. The next realization that I had was that I was in a white room with a feeling like the ceiling was coming down on my head.
Mm.
And I was told that I was in the hospital for five days.
So you lost consciousness?
Yes, I had typhoid fever.
Oh, my goodness.
105 when I was admitted. And I was delirious with dysentery.
Oh, my
God. So, mind you, they sent me back home now. But the whole point, the bottom line is that my grandmother did not believe me when I said I was sick.
Right.
So our
right.
interpretation was that I was...
Did not want to go to school.
Giving an excuse to go to school.
Yes, which is typical of the older folks in
it's
those.
It's typical, but and it also brings home the fact that the mentality of parents and grandparents at that time, that school was everything.
Most important, yes.
Most important. So the reason I said that would change my growing up from there on was I was taken out of that school, the public school, for 3 months, and put in a Catholic school, which was closer to where I lived, and it was in the parish that I went to. My mother went to church, and you have to remember that my mother was a staunch Roman Catholic.
Okay. Now, was your mother born in Jamaica or Panama?
No, my mother was born in Jamaica.
Oh, she was born
in Jamaica. Her sisters and brothers were born in Panama because her father, my grandfather, he left like most of the men of that time to engage in the
building of
the Panama Canal.
Right, right.
Which was completed in 1914. I got all these stats from your previous...
Good.
Your previous Labrish.
Oh, good. When we did the history.
Yeah.
Yes. So, are you still there?
Yes.
My board just went dead, so let me just back up here. But as long as you can hear me, we can converse.
We had a terrific windstorm this afternoon.
Yeah, we had a bolt of lightning. It's back up, but it just went blank.
Oh.
We had a bolt of lightning here. We're having some bad weather.
Brilliant.
So I'd like to remind our listeners online and on board that you're listening to Blog Talk Radio, Backyard Labrish. We're here each Wednesday at 8. And tonight we have the pleasure of speaking to Mr. Lay Nunes, who is giving us some Labrish about growing up in Jamaica in the late 30s and 40s. We're going down memory lane. So back to you, Lay. So we are now in the Catholic school. What was the name of that school?
This school was Holy Rosary School.
Uh-huh. It was in France. What part of the kingdom was that?
That is a good one because I'm not sure exactly how you would place Holy Rosary. I know that just above Holy Rosary was was that Rawlington Town?
Oh, yes, possibly. But how did you get to school? Let's start with that. You're now six or seven, right?
Seven, I would say. I would walk to school.
You walked to school?
Walked
okay.
This would be a better deal now because, remember, when I went to the public school for 3 months, this was in downtown Kingston. I had to take a bus. And so I didn't need to take a bus to the school. I could walk.
Okay. And you wore uniforms?
No.
To Holy Rosary.
Holy Rosary. No, we didn't wear uniform.
Oh, really?
But you know, we in those days, most children going to school wore khaki outfit. You know.
But it wasn't an official uniform, is what you mean.
Yeah, and people would still wear that because it was easier to maintain.
Right.
The parents would have a couple uniforms, and the children would look nice and neat. The girls probably had a different deal.
Uh-huh.
You know, but I remember this school was run by the nuns.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, nuns are nuns. Anywhere you go in the world, you get the same spiel about how nuns are. Nuns can be they look pious and they say a lot of prayers and all like that. But when you're in school with them, they are in charge, and you can get the cane just as easily from a nun as you could from Miss Rudd in the public school.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you thought you were getting in. So, by the way, did you ever get the cane at Confessorial?
I was trying to think as I'm telling you, but I don't think so. My whatever I did, to merit a cane strike was not really. I didn't qualify. In other words.
Oh, but you saw other people caned.
Yes.
Okay, and that kept you from the caning, apparently.
You bet. But the whole environment of leading up to getting the cane was bad enough.
Don't forget,
you got a parade up on the stage,
mm-hmm.
In front of Miss Rudd, in front of the rest of the school.
Public discipline.
Discipline.
Mm-hmm. It was the mentality at the time.
Yep. So, you know, that's...
We're now in the Catholic school.
Yep.
So what are your memories of that?
Oh, this here was... the Catholic school was run by the nuns in the parish, meaning the church that we all, as a family, would go.
Mm-hmm.
And... The way this parish was run was such that it felt like an extended family.
Oh,
you know, you went to school there. Your parents are there. All of these nuns were friends of my mother.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't give me any particular privilege.
Mm-hmm.
You know. They would give me the cane when I merited it just the same.
Right.
Even though these same nuns on Sundays, and this is the hurtful part of this whole deal, was my mother would have me, be a principal part of making ice cream on Sundays. She would make cake, and I would have to jump on the bicycle. And I would borrow my father's bicycle and rush up to the convent where the nuns are, and they would be there waiting for their ice cream and cake.
All right.
Yeah, but
smiles on their faces.
Monday morning, it's like they never knew me.
Yeah. Of course, yeah. No curry favor.
No curry favor.
Remember that? No curry favor. Okay. So, what are your best memories of that Holy Rosary?
Well, Holy Rosary, as I started to say, was not only was it a good school, it's a primary school that prepares you for your secondary school education. At Holy Rosary, we had a lot of facilities. And because of these facilities, we didn't need to go outside of the parish to do too many things. Even to go to the movies. There was a movie theater right next to the church, but the priest, the pastor, Father Brannan, used to have an arrangement with the owner of the movie house, the theater, to get current movies. And he would show those movies. We had a large area beyond on the tennis court in front of the tennis court, which led up to like the school hall, and
uh-huh.
they would set up a big screen and we would see he would show the movies.
Right. So here's an interesting question, because it sounds, when you talk about tennis courts and movies being shown at a primary school, let's call it primary for the different grades, you know?
Yeah.
It almost sounds like it was for privileged people. Now, here's my question. Was it only for Catholics?
Well, let's put it another way. If you really came down to it, I would say it was not only for Catholics.
Okay, so no.
Only because there was a fee to go to the school, and once you pay the fee, you know, you
were eligible.
You were eligible, but in a practical sense, the school was an adjunct to the church, and I would say that the parishioners, the parents who had children, their children would have priority in getting into the school.
Right, I got you. As long as they could afford to pay.
As long as they could afford to pay.
So more or less, the school was for the people who could afford the tuition.
Afford tuition. And don't forget, that's why I said in my opening remarks that my parents were working people. Just to make a point that this school was not really for privileged.
Right. Not in the terms of rich.
Not in the terms of rich.
But in the terms of being able to afford the tuition.
And you bring up an important point that which was triggered by my mentioning the tennis court.
Right.
We had facilities at that school for instance the boys, I can't speak for the girls, it was a boys and girls school. We could play football on the premises.
Mm-hmm.
We could play tennis on the premises.
Mm-hmm.
And the school always had a dramatic society, like where the older students would put on plays. We did several Gilbert and Sullivan plays, which
And we're talking about in the 40s.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I want to mention the dates and the years, because you know I think this will put things in perspective in terms of people coming by to listen later on. Or even the younger people now, trying to find out what used to happen in the 40s.
Yeah. So
you had a well-rounded curriculum, number one, and you also had the facilities and the equipment
right.
that would, you know, make it work.
And the funny you should say, we had the equipment. We would get big donations from, because we're talking about the pastor of most of the churches, the Catholic churches in Jamaica at that time. The pastors were from the U.S., and they would get large donations of equipment and school things, you know, things that
right, from the U.S.
From the U.S., so that we were not wanting for, any of those things that a school, for instance, in the deeper parts of the country, the country parts, that was not necessarily Catholic, would have.
Right, or even in Kingston, like
in
the poorer areas, because, you know, when we grew up, there were poor areas in Jamaica. You know, certain parts of Kingston was always the poorer part, and I'm sure that if they had schools in those areas, they would not compare necessarily to the schools that the school you're talking about.
Right. Yet, the school that I initially mentioned, the Conversorium, was a very well-run school. And
yes.
It was under the auspices, of course, of
the British government.
The British government, and of course, it was under Anglican Church
right,
of England auspices.
Right.
So, you know, they were doing pretty good.
Right.
As compared with my school.
Mm-hmm.
So at Holy Rosary, we were so well organized as a group of people that we didn't need to go outside of the parish for almost anything. We would have, it was a closely knit parish. To this very day, people that I grew up with, I'm still in touch with.
Wonderful.
And we would have school sponsored picnics. We would go. There was a Fernham Field. I don't know if you remember.
Oh yes, I remember Fernham Field.
Yeah,
I thought the camp activities went on there during the war.
That's right, and that field was still open, and the choir from Holy Rosary used to go there and sing masses for the troops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was an exciting thing for a young boy to engage in, you know.
So I would say that your young younger, even in your young years, you really were exposed to the arts, to music, to all of that good stuff.
You bet.
I would say that you were privileged.
Well, it depends on how you look at it. Because here's the thing, Madge, that my mother used to drag me to church recitals that were held at the church.
Uh-huh.
You know, not everybody would go, but people that might be interested in the arts and like singing and good singing would go to these events.
Right.
But the point is, it was available to us if you wanted to participate.
And I'm sure it was available to the general public too, most times. As you say again, it's the people who made the effort to not only they participate, but to make their children participate. And all of these things, and as I say on Blog Talk, on the backyard all the time, is to try to inspire and instill in the younger generation that, you know, from a parent point of view, you know, you have to take a very active part in what's going on with your children if you want a better future for them. you can't just leave it to the school or you leave it to the government or leave it to God. You got to participate. And this is what I hear you from your grandmother, your mother, you know, the people around you were actively involved in your learning.
Yes, yes, yes.
And using whatever resources they had to make it happen. So these points to me are important so that people can know it's not because it was easy. It's not because, you know what I mean? Because people will have excuses now when they're not able to do things.
Right.
And we're talking about now of times when transportation was not the same, roads were not the same, nothing was the same. So I would think that it was a lot harder sometimes even to get around.
Well, of course, and we can't forget that we were either just in or just out of a war, and even things that we had to import, foodstuff, even rice was
rationed. Yeah, I remember the rationing days.
And it was an environment that some people had to struggle to live in. I say some people because we had a little bungalow in the back of our house that was always rented.
Uh-huh.
And though in that particular time it was rented to some Chinese tenants, which was an advantage because we are used to in that time. All of our Chinese friends and I had an abundance of them, ran these shops.
Uh-huh.
The parents ran the shops for
the shop.
grocery shops.
Uh-huh.
So there wasn't such a thing as shortage of rice for us.
Right.
You know?
There again, you are privileged.
Well, so much so that, and I hate to say this, that even the smell of brown rice in those days, I could not take. I just didn't want brown rice.
Uh-huh.
Pardon. And I've come to know now that that's one of the best things for you.
It was the best rice for you, yes.
So
I hear you saying is that you have very good memories.
Very
those early years of growing up in Jamaica.
And, if I had to do it again, even with the stringent discipline of the people that ran the schools that I tried to show, we're not the worst off for it.
Oh, yes.
You know?
Yes, yes.
And we at a very early age, we got used to being disciplined, to follow instructions, to show respect, and things like that, and it didn't have to be a subject in school. It was just part of the way of
life.
Life. Yeah.
Uh huh. Definitely. That's how I feel too. But what I want to mention here is that it was embedded early. Early. It was embedded early. You know, respect, for yourself, respect for other people, respect for your property. Property not necessarily in the physical property, but your body, your clothes, things that belong to you,
yeah.
As well as other people's. So I think that people need to get back to some of those old ways.
I'd say basics, because I can remember I talked about my grandmother in just mentioning that she was very stern with me. But on the other hand, I can hear us every time I go through right here now. I will leave a room. And I will turn out the light, and I can hear my grandmother in the back of my mind, turn the lights out when you leave the room.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah.
And look what that does. Right now we're talking about saving energy, you know?
Right.
And you're not wasteful.
All right. Do you know what year your grandmother was born?
I forget, to be honest with you. I think it has to be about like in the 1890s.
Right. I was just about to say it has to be in the 18 something.
Yeah. So.
And obviously, you know, if she was trying to instill those things in you, they were instilled in her.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this handing down of, you know, certain principles go way back in the Jamaican psyche.
Yeah.
So I just want the listeners that might listen to the show later on to realize that, you know, we have a long history of discipline and respect. And the generations now, even some of the parents, are letting up on that part of the upbringing of their children. But it has served us well,
yep.
I would say. So, you know, perhaps they need to go back to basics. They really need to go back to basics.
Yeah.
So at what age did you leave Holy Rosary?
All right, now we're... I spent roughly about 3 years and a half or so at Holy Rosary, and I would say about 13 or so, I was ready to go to secondary school, and you apply to the secondary schools, most children would, but being under the Catholic umbrella so far, the tendency naturally would be to apply to a Catholic secondary school, which would be St. George's.
St. George's. Was there only one boys' school in Kingston at the time that was Catholic?
Of the caliber of St. George's.
There were others?
There were other schools, but they didn't have the certification that...
Okay, because I don't even know of another Catholic school name, boys' school name.
St. Aloysius would be one.
That sounds like a church. I don't remember that being a school.
Yeah, St. Aloysius was a very good school. But you start off with a problem with them when compared to St. George's College.
They weren't accredited or recognized.
They weren't as recognized only because the St. George's College was run by the Jesuit priests.
Uh-huh.
And the Jesuit priests are known worldwide for their teaching.
Abilities.
They're leading scholars in almost every field around the world.
Right.
So, you know, it was, I feel privileged to have attended St. George's College and have received a Jesuit education.
Wonderful. So what do you think you brought, what was the most outstanding thing you can remember from, let's go back to the first school, which would be Holy Rosary?
Preparation and discipline that you need to go to a school like, to go to college, in other words. I wouldn't even just say St. George's. We got it at Holy Rosary. It was a very high level of instruction there.
Uh-huh.
And which you needed to qualify to go to St. George's.
Right. And that leads me to just make a point here, Leigh, about the importance of foundation for anything. You know, if you're going to build a skyscraper, your foundation is totally different than if you're going to build a two-story or a one-level place. So we have to think in terms of educating our children that the foundation, that first few years are really the most important. So that is why I'm so passionate about trying to support the organizations that are doing their best to help the children at the foundation age, you know, the primary school age.
Yeah.
That's where things are set into motion.
Yeah, and of course, in these, in our time here now, you're up against almost insurmountable odds because the parents are working two jobs in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are you know, on their own. It's a one person family.
Right.
That was one of the things in Jamaica at the time that even if your marriage was crumbling, in our time I'm talking,
mm-hmm.
people try to keep it together because it
stay together
family.
For the children.
Right, because of the children.
Mm-hmm.
And so it makes it harder now to, as you say, support the cause of youngsters back in Jamaica.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I just want to say, you know, quickly that I watched an Oprah show yesterday about this African woman who grew up in a village where girls were not allowed to go to school.
Aye.
And how she set a goal in her mind. You know, she used to do her brother's homework. It was a very touching story. And finally, you know, all her dreams came true because she wrote them down, buried them under a rock, and so on and so forth. But I'm saying this is a woman who lays younger than us.
Mm-hmm.
I could see, you know, from her appearance. And I'm saying that to say, you know, even the people in Jamaica who might not feel privileged,
yeah,
right, they need to look at what's happening in other parts of the world now. No, I don't mean in the 30s like we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I mean about now. And know that they need to walk with what they have.
Yeah.
And consider themselves privileged.
Yeah.
When you compare yourself to what, I'm not saying what is right and wrong. I'm just saying as individuals, you know, we need to look at what we have, look at where we are, look at the resources that we can tap into and
I'm going to go in on another phone now.
Okay.
All right.
I'll just conversation going till I see you come back on the board.
All right.
To my listeners, I want to thank all my listeners for calling in and listening to Backyard Labrish. We are here each week at 8 o'clock. We hope that you're enjoying our conversation, and we hope that you will converse with us by hitting one on your telephone and letting me know that you'd like to make a comment or, you know, just interact with us in some way. For the people listening online, I want to thank you for stopping by the backyard and hope that you will let us know how you like our shows. If you go by Blog Talk Radio, you can make a comment or you can tell us which one of the shows. All of our shows are archived. You can just cherry pick the one you want to listen to at any time. You can even send that particular link to one of your friends if they're not on our list for Backyard Labrish and don't get our email about the broadcast. So we're asking you to help spread the word for us if you enjoy our show. So if you'd like to, you can send me their email or you can just copy the whatever show you listen to that you like at the top of your browser and send that particular link to them and they can listen at their convenience. Just while they're on their computers, they can just minimize it and listen to whatever show they would like to hear. So again, I want to thank you for listening to Backyard Labrish and hope that you'll help us spread the word. We also have a website, which is backyardlabrish.com. And we hope you'll visit us there. And I see that my guest, Mr. Lane Nunes, who is talking about back in the day when he was young, is back on the board. So
yes, I am.
Welcome back. Yes, I was, as I was saying, you know, the foundation, because what I heard you saying is that you got a very strong foundation, both at home and at school.
Right.
So you're now in high school.
Yes, yeah, so I'm picked up by the Jesuits, and a high school is in Jamaica is usually called a college, especially in our day, because
the college we had.
Yes, and we actually did college work.
Right,
yeah.
Right. That was corrected in England.
Yeah, under our academic system in those days, you were expected to enroll either in a liberal arts curriculum or a science curriculum. And the syllabus was set at the University of Cambridge in London,
mm-hmm.
and coordinated with all the secondary schools in the British colonies.
Mm-hmm.
St. George's being no exception. The thing about St. George's is that it was not a government-run school. It was a private school in the strict sense. So we got no grants or anything from the government. So that made us as independent as you'd want it to be. Whereas a college like Jamaica College was, you might even say, a government-sponsored college.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So,
but in our days, we're talking about, that was not free as it is now. It was because, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah, they all of these colleges now accept, and St. George's included, accept government sponsorship.
Right, but at the time, in the 30s and 40s, they weren't. Your parents would have to be able to afford tuition for you to go there.
Right.
Besides, you would have to be academically, you know, equipped to
mm-hmm.
enter, because there was an exam, entrance exam.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So you was most of the guys, because you went to an all-boys school, who left Holy Rosary with you in St. George's? Did they go, most of your friends sort of migrated with you?
There were some, but not all.
Uh-huh.
Some guys, you know, didn't go back to school. They went to work. A lot of them, their parents were of such a caliber that they went to work with their parents or something like that. And, you know, the old system where if your father worked in a company, chances are you're going to get a job in the company.
Right.
And as soon as they left Holy Rosary,
mm-hmm.
they started to intern at some of these companies
uh-huh.
that their parents
right.
worked in, you know.
Huh?
But several came to St. George's.
Okay. So you're now a teenager?
Yes.
Okay.
And the first thing that they teach you on the first day at St. George's, when the priest shakes your hand, is how to give a good man's handshake.
Ah.
I had the priest teaching me in my first form. He was a boxer. And
oh.
when he held my hand, brother, I thought, you know, all the fingers were gone already.
Because would you consider yourself in those days a thin-bodied person?
Yes, I was. I was
a frail person.
Frail.
Uh-huh, okay.
But at the same time, what I remember about this first year was getting into an altercation with a
a bigger fella. He was a bully. And we had an argument. And, of course, this priest, being a boxer, said, the only way you're going to settle this is after school in the evening in the ring.
Actually, he did that?
Yes.
Oh, so, my goodness. It's like a duel. They used to shoot one another.
This little frail boy had to go into the ring with this guy. And this guy was on the boxing team, too. So I don't know. Maybe the priest wanted to make an example out of me. I don't know. But I had to go in and...
You actually had boxing gloves?
Yes.
I never heard of that. Now, were you in first form?
Yes, first form. Yeah.
Huh. So was this some sort of hazing?
It wasn't a hazing. It wasn't hazing in the strict sense, but it was, the priest was actually telling me in a way that I shouldn't mess with his boxing team.
Oh.
Yeah. So
in other words, the fight wasn't like both of you were, you picked a fight with him or he picked a fight with you.
No, this was
a
resolution to whatever it was between the guy and me. Yeah.
Okay. So you're in the ring, and what happened? You have a referee?
Oh yes, this is
an official fight.
By this time, all of my form, the guys taking sides and around the ring and whoever else
take
is near the ring.
Too? I know the Catholics were always selling something. Were they selling tickets to this fight?
No, get out of here.
Okay.
It was a legitimate bout.
Okay.
And I think. I don't really remember, but, it really was a one-sided thing. This guy must have weighed about 50 pounds more than me and whatever.
Yeah, you were a miasma baby.
Not in those days. I mean, that's long behind me.
Right. I was just putting that in.
Yeah. I think the bout was called after one round.
Oh.
And,
knocked you out?
No, I wasn't knocked out, but maybe I sustained a few punches. we don't need to talk.
Can I ask you a quick question?
What?
What? Did you lose respect of the rest of the people that were on your side?
No, by no means. In fact, it made everybody think twice before you would have another bully. Or somebody trying to pick on another person, you know? I don't think that ever happened again.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Oh,
psychology.
You know.
That priest set a tone there.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting.
And it also set a tone for him. You don't mess with him either. This is Father Donovan.
Yeah.
So, along the route, there were lots of instances where you learn by the experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anyway, back to the academics a little. You're expected in a school like this to go for 4 years with one aim in view, and that is to pass the finals, the final examinations.
Mm-hmm.
And we mentioned before that the syllabus was set at the University of Cambridge in London, and
mm-hmm.
the set books were also designated in London, and we would purchase them at the local bookstore, which, if I call the name, you would probably recognize.
Yes.
Sankthans was the one and only bookstore that had any textbooks, yeah. So over a period of 4 years, you would get all the necessary books, and you would interpret them inside out, all with the view of passing your finals. And when that time came, you would take the test over either 1 or 2 days, as the case may be, depending on your selected courses, and then the tests would be sent, returned to London for grading.
Uh-huh.
And I would grade them A, B, C, or F.
Uh-huh.
You know? And the students that pass with, let's say, all A's, you know, pass with distinction, they would call it. And, of course, this kind of passing grade would qualify you to go on for two more years into higher schools. They used to call that higher schools.
Mm-hmm.
And
would be in England or in Jamaica?
In Jamaica.
Okay.
But when you're finished with those 2 years,
mm-hmm.
you could likely be in a position to get a scholarship, depending on how you made out on the scores that you made on these tests.
Uh huh. And
so,
I remember them being called the Cambridge exam.
Yeah, the Cambridge exams.
And there were two levels.
Two levels. The second one, which the first one was for 4 years, the other one was for 2 years.
Right.
You would get your high school certificate out of that,
uh-huh.
which if you decided to go to an American college.
Uh-huh.
Depending again on the scores that you got in your higher school, you could have been exempt from the first years.
Uh-huh.
For first year of the American
freshman
college.
Freshman year of the college, you are accepted in here.
Yeah.
Because the standards were at its second level.
If you put it like that, but
obviously, if you're going to exempt the first year, then your final year of where you're leaving is at the second level of the what it was here.
Well it was the whole school system was of a higher standard than the American school system, but if you want to say the last year was on equivalent to the first year in college. Here.
Right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So the system has changed, at the present time, and I would be happy if somebody would call in and explain how the current system works. But it's a similar thing about taking exams. I don't think they're sent to.
No, I think the whole curriculum is different. I don't know in what way, but I think it's a West Indian thing now. They're sent
to
place, or, you know, I don't know if they're sent actually now, but I know that, like, all the islands perhaps are on the same standards and have perhaps the same curriculum.
And
but,
you have all levels at
different.
The end of it. To, you know, your exam would be all levels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, listen, those days were traumatic days. You just figure that you study 4 years, and if you fail that test, you know, a lot of people, several people had nervous breakdowns, you know.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because it came to a point where sometimes you have students who are good students, but they're not good at exams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
right now, you know, it's just a human experience that it's not that they don't know the subject, but when they're put under pressure, you know, their mind.
Right, and your whole future now depends on this exam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So. So this would you would end this scenario at around age 17 if you completed all of the years that we mentioned before and the two,
right,
or even 18.
Right, I would say more 18. So let me ask you something. What about the fun side of college then? Let's call it college. Did you do you have any memories of that? Or I should go back to the experience during those 2 years. Is there anything that stands out in your mind that you think, like just like your grandmother, you know, telling you about certain things, that you think has stayed with you over the years?
Well, you know, I at the point where I reached the higher school level, and I thought I knew that the only thing keeping me in Jamaica was I was going to be captain of the swimming team.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was 51 now, and there was a huge hurricane in 51. So
right, I remember it well.
We weren't sure if they were going to put on the swimming championships, but I think if I recall correctly, I think it went we St. George's College won swimming for 15 years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we just didn't lose swimming. And my year, I captained the team on the 12th year, I think.
Mm.
The school was, you know, school was fun because you had to hold your end up. People weren't at going to school. You see, like people children go to school here because they must go to school, and they have no goal in sight.
Mm-hmm.
At schools like what like we had, I mean, the Jamaica the JC boys, the KC boys, we all had the same idea that you're going to a school for a reason, and the reason is to pass these finals. You're gonna look bad. Your family's gonna be put out because, you know, they
spend so much money. Mm-hmm.
And you gotta show some interest in academics. I, for one, I had to do 2 foreign languages beside English.
Mm-hmm.
And I took Pardon?
You took Latin?
Yeah, I had to take Latin, classical Latin and if you might call it contemporary Latin, even though that's not true because Latin was already a dead language.
Uh-huh.
But I am so glad that I took Latin because for your English,
mm-hmm.
it is I can't tell you how helpful it is.
Well, it just makes English make sense.
That's right.
That's how I would term it.
That's true, the way you put it,
yeah.
Because the grammar and the whole the intricate part of English, and English is not an easy language.
Right.
But Latin certainly helps you to decipher some of the
complexities of English.
Mm-hmm. And I might mention that at St. George's, even though I was in the science group, we had the best physics and biology labs in the country.
Mm.
So that we would get students from all of the other colleges coming in to our evening school to use our facilities.
Right.
And, yeah, it wasn't all your head is in the book sort of thing, even though the Jesuits believed, they believed in this Latin saying, mens sana in corpore sano, which means a sound mind and a sound body.
Right.
So even though, you know, academics was always primary, St. George's boys were no pushover in athletics. We did
uh-huh.
pretty well in athletics.
Right. I remember some of the football matches.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you tell me some of the sport activities that went on in those days at your college.
Well, I participated, of course. I mentioned swimming and tennis.
Uh-huh.
But an unusual event was when I captained the rifle team for the first time, St. George's entered a rifle team, and we won, and I was the captain in about 1949.
So your competition was against other colleges?
Other colleges, but
there's
a...
And where were you shooting?
Well, I was in the cadets at the time.
Uh-huh.
And the cadets competed on a school-by-school basis. And we were shooting at the range up in Warwick Hills.
Uh-huh.
And...
That's where the soldiers used to go on practice?
I think so, yes.
Uh-huh.
At the range. And we were just extraordinary.
Interesting.
We had 12 guys on the team, and we won.
So you had, the rifles were provided by the school?
No, the rifles, remember I said this. I was in the cadets, and it was a cadet thing. The cadets
competing. Yes.
And the only reason I was in the cadets, you either had to do a sport at St. George's or you had to join the cadets.
Uh-huh.
I did both because the commander of the cadets was one of the Nashes, and he was a great swimmer.
Uh-huh.
So, one hand washes the other. I was on his team. I joined the cadets. And, all the swimmers pulled together on that one.
Oh, interesting.
So
you had a rifle. You had what do you call that? Rifle shooting. What is the name of it?
We had the old. I think it was the Enfield rifle and the .303 rifle. And until this day, my shoulder hurts.
So you had swimming and you had football. I mean, what the school had, even though you might not participate.
Yeah, football. We had football.
Mm-hmm.
And we were always a threat in the football. It was always between St. George's and KC, and then it became St. George's and KC.
Uh-huh.
And there was after you win that, whoever wins that competition goes on to compete against Monroe,
uh-huh.
which is a whole different college there in Mandeville.
Uh-huh.
We talked about Monroe when we did the parishes.
Right.
Yeah, so, all of this was really crucial times. We took our sport seriously, and again, we had to behave ourselves with decorum because when you go to these matches, it's them against us, and sometimes it gets raucous.
Right, right.
And, of course, this is where the girls came in, because all the girls' schools had to take sides.
Right, uh-huh.
And
well, in my girls were for the St. George's boys most time, and St. Andrew's girls were for the JC boys, and all of that good stuff.
Yeah.
But, it's funny how the time flies when we're having fun in the backyard. We only have about 5 minutes left. Can you believe that? Yes, it's just been such a wonderful labyrinth. And we just got to high school. We don't even get to all the dating stuff yet.
I can remember, some of my firsts.
Really? Where do you used to swim? Because I think I know where it is, and I remember having a lot of dates there.
You mean at Bournemouth?
Right.
Yeah.
No, I don't even know if it's still in existence, but some of the oldies might remember.
Unfortunately, they ripped down that whole
building. Oh, my gosh.
And there are 4 pylons left. That's the only way you would know that something existed there.
Well, at this point, I'd like to reach out to my callers and to let them know if they have any pictures, if any Kingstonians have any pictures of Bournemouth, if they would please send it to me at backyardlavish@bellsouth.net, because, I'd really like to have that as part of the treasure of memories. because that is a place that the people from Franklintown and Rollington Town and the Kingstonians I know very well, because not only did a lot of people learn to swim there, but they always have parties on a Friday night. Remember that?
To dance up there.
Yes, that's where I learned to dance. That's where I had most of my dates. And that's where, because, you know, my husband, Johnny, used to play water polo there.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was on a water polo team that played there.
Yep.
And that's where, I remember that diving board. Yeah. And one of these days when I am doing my memories, I will give some people some jokes about that diving board that will knock you
off. Don't tell me you jumped off of one of those boards.
Oh, yes, I did. It's what happened when I jumped.
Oh, yeah.
It will be a riot.
You'll have
my listeners and my fans, that I am going to do my memories one of these days, and I hope we'll have a lot of callers. So Leigh, I think we're going to have a follow-up on this, because there's a lot more... A lot more that I want to know about your memories.
It's a good thing we didn't get to the good part yet, so another time.
Yes, so can we reschedule you for next week?
Well, I don't know about that. If you have another guest with spicier things, fine.
Right, okay.
We
still have a few minutes, so if there's anything else that is in terms of high school that stood out and you think has helped you to be who you are, because I know you went on to have a successful career here in the United States, of which you're retired from, and you still continue to be quite active. So we got 3 minutes left.
Well, I just wanted to say that, by the upbringing that we had, which you talked about, and the... There's a common thread in all of this, and you might just say that in my case it was religion and education.
Mm-hmm.
And this was typical of parents in my time, that they worshipped and they brought up their children with a little bit of respect.
God-fearing, as we would say.
And God-fearing.
Mm-hmm.
And they made sacrifices for the children to achieve these ends.
Right.
It formulated the backbone of my character.
Mm-hmm.
The 3 years plus that I went to public school, and the other 3 years that I went to school with the nuns, if I had to do it over, I would.
Right.
These were formative years and an integral part of my life.
Right.
And it was designed to build character building and served as the mold that fashioned me through college here and later in a career of accounting and management in the company that I worked for. So these were life experiences you can't forget, and I am happy that it went the way it did, and it's a legacy that I'm thankful for, and I could only get growing up in the 40s in Kingston.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I really want to thank you for sharing so much of that past with us, and I'm sure that all our listeners will appreciate it. And I want to encourage our listeners to add to this with their experience from whatever part of the island, because as we did our tour, Leigh, we know that things were different on different parts of the island during those days. So we would like to hear from some people who grew up perhaps in the north, in the south, in different parts. We'd love to have you join us on the backyard. And again, I'm going to thank our callers for being with us and to encourage you to spread the word and help us to get the word out that we're here each week. And we'd love to have anyone, you don't have to be a Jamaican, but just love the culture. And we are here to just relax, have fun, and reminisce.
Well, just on that point, you said you don't have to be a Jamaican. You know, when I went to St. George's, I always had friends who were not Jamaicans. We had a whole bunch of guys from all over Latin America and South America who came to St. George's to learn English.
Right.
And for some reason, they ended up in being very good friends of mine.
Ah.
You know, and it just goes to show you that, and so, some of these people adapted the island.
Right.
You know?
They never went back. Yes,
never
I remember
back.
A lot of people. A lot of, I remember in even when I got married, you know, and was a young girl in Jamaica, there were students who came from Haiti, you know, to learn English in Jamaica. I remember one that was boarding with us. But as a matter of fact, that's they helped me name my first child. But again, you know, we have such a rich culture and a rich experience. We're going to be checking off the air in a few minutes. So bye to my listeners on the air. Lay, we are still streaming. So we
still
talk.
As well.
But, you know, it was so nice of you to share all of those fun memories with us tonight. And I look forward to seeing all our callers in the backyard next week when we'll have another special guest, or we'll have Mr. Nunes from the Bronx, home of the Yankees, again. I hope your team is winning, sir.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye. Have a great week. And remember, we love our island. Bye.